Everybody seems to be talking about the new law from Alabama related to abortion, which is very stringent and is being decried by the left. Even some people on the right are asking questions about it. We're going to focus on this right now with John Eidsmo, who is senior counsel with the Foundation for Moral Law, which is based in Alabama, and as an organization, it endorses the Alabama pro-life bill. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and I want to say a little bit about John Eidsmo. He is an accomplished author. His classic book, Christianity and the Constitution, is extremely important and was written many years ago. He's also written several books for Nordskog Publishing about the history of law. And John also has been a longtime law professor at different schools. Mr. Eidsmo, Colonel Eidsmo, great to have you back on the program. Thank you so much for being with us, John.
Well, I think you forgot one thing.
Oh, what's that?
One of my greatest credentials is that I've been a friend of Jerry Newcomb for over 30 years. But yes, it's great to be with you.
Oh, that too. Okay. All right. So explain about the law. And first of all, is everything being said about the law correct? Let's just deal with it. Okay.
Well, the law prohibits abortion from the beginning of pregnancy all the way to the end, of course. It does make an exception for the life of the mother and the health of the mother, which could be problematic, but it's drafted for the purpose of raising a contest with Roe versus Wade. There are those around the nation who are saying this means that women could be prosecuted under this law for having abortions. That is simply false. If they said that, either they're lying or they haven't read the law. The law specifically says that the mother cannot and will not be prosecuted under this law, only the doctor who actually performs the abortion.
And what is the punishment for the doctor who performs the abortion?
It would be the same kind of punishment for other types of murder. It could be up to 99 years to life in prison.
Wow. Okay, so basically what this law is doing is it's saying abortion is murder, and therefore if the person participates in the murder, then they're a murderer. Now, what about, let's say, a nurse or a clinic worker that participates in the abortion as an accessory, if you will?
That's a good question. I'd have to check the law, and I can probably do that while we're talking here, to see whether it applies to other people who assist. But it's primarily directed toward the doctor, and I put that term in quotes because this is not really medical science. It's butchery, but it's primarily directed toward the doctor here.
Okay, I think part of the criticism against the law also relates to the fact that it does not have exceptions for rape and incest. And we should point out that the reason abortion was even accepted, which was forced on the American people by, at least at, you know, for all 50 states, by the U.S. Supreme Court in Roe v. Wade, and that decision was based on the understanding, which turned out to be a lie, that the victim in question, Roe, had been raped. And that wasn't the case. And it turns out, you know, later she, you know, even totally disagreed with Roe v. Wade. But anyway, go on.
You're correct. This does not contain an exception for rape and incest. And not because that isn't a serious issue. It certainly is. But we're really talking about less than 1% of all abortions when we're talking about the rape and incest exception. And I would just say, first of all, that, a pregnancy resulting from rape is a very, very traumatic thing. Abortion does not undo that tragedy. It complicates it with another tragedy.
Yes.
And better solution for most would be to bear the child and give the child up for adoption, although I've known of some rape victims who have kept the child and raised the child and consider themselves very blessed for having done so.
Mm-hmm.
But I get this question a number of times when I'm speaking, especially to younger audiences, and many times I'll just ask them this. Okay, let's suppose you come home from school. You come home, you're alone in the house, there's a
Can you get closer? Can you get closer to the receiver there? Speak louder.
There's a knock on the door.
Thank you.
And the policeman at the door says, you are under arrest because your father committed a robbery. Question in your mind is going to be, why should I be punished for something my father did? Well, the same applies here. Why should an innocent, unborn child be punished with death or the sin or crime of the father in this case. And so we do not have a rape or incest exception in the law. And I might just add that a year ago, Alabama adopted an amendment to our state constitution that provides that all life from conception is protected, and this simply makes our law consistent with our state constitution.
Now, it seems to me that the media, even worldwide, is trying to crucify something like 25 men that had a lot to do with this law, the men that are in the legislature of Alabama.
Well, the main sponsor of the law, who carried it very courageously through both the House and the Senate, was in fact a woman, Representative Collins. And I might say that in the criticism that she faced both on and off the floor, she stood up very well, very courageously and very graciously. But she was the primary sponsor and carrier of the bill.
Now, you said that you think with Justice Kavanaugh on the bench, the court may now be ready to overrule Roe v. Wade. Let me ask you a question. Kavanaugh has not totally turned out to be consistently conservative, despite all the things that happen. Or, you know, I've heard some conservative commentators say that maybe, you know, those that terrible ordeal he went through just sort of made him feel like, okay, now I've got to prove to the liberals, see, I'm not so bad after all.
I would like to think that that ordeal would not affect how he would rule in cases. And
if it would
affect him at all, it might even make him more solid toward those who supported him and more hostile toward those who opposed. But I would like to think that wouldn't affect his way of doing justice. But when I looked at Justice Kavanaugh, now every one of those nine justices is an individual, and every one of them occasionally is going to make a ruling that surprises you. But I looked at Justice Kavanaugh. His background was very much that of a conservative Catholic. He made Justice Rehnquist, he said he was his first judicial hero and constitutional hero. He volunteered in a number of cases to write amicus briefs supporting Christian students in high school and things like that. I think that he's going to be a very fine justice. But there's something else I might mention on this, too, and that's that when the Supreme Court decides to overrule a previous decision, they don't just suddenly do it out of the blue. Usually, they'll be moving away from that previous decision over a period of time. Plessy versus Ferguson, the segregation decision, the court gradually moved away from that, and then in 1954 overruled it in Brown versus Board of Education. Likewise, concerning the Commerce Clause, the Hammer versus Dagenhart decision overruled finally after a long period of time with U.S. versus Darby. And then concerning using union dues to political purposes and compelling them and the like, the Abood decision, which had allowed that, gradually the court moved away from that. And finally, just last year, the Supreme Court overruled that decision in the Janus decision. And I think what we've seen in Roe versus Wade is the court gradually moving away from that extreme position. What we've seen is that with the Webster decision, and then the Planned Parenthood decision, the court lowers the status of the right to abortion from a fundamental, strict scrutiny, compelling interest right to a middle-tier right that only needs an undue burden test to justify it. Various laws that would have been struck down under the Roe versus Wade rationale have been upheld under the Casey rationale, and I think the court has been moving away from it. I think they are ready now to completely overrule it, and Kavanaugh being the fifth vote on the court, we have now the most conservative Supreme Court any time since the 1930s. And I think the court is ready to do it. At least I think it's worth a try.
Wow. Is the goal of this law to challenge Roe?
That is a primary goal. I mean, there's no question that this law is inconsistent with Roe, that it is inconsistent even with the undue burden test of Planned Parenthood versus Casey, and it is drafted specifically for the purpose of challenging Roe versus Wade, and undoubtedly when this bill goes into effect, which it will 6 months from the day it was signed, undoubtedly at that time, if not sooner, there will be constitutional challenges to it. It will not surprise me if federal district courts and circuit courts that feel bound by the previous Supreme Court decisions will stay the enforcement of this, but when it ultimately gets to the Supreme Court, which might be a couple of years, I think there is a good likelihood that it will be overruled.
Okay, how about a comment on criticisms that are coming from the right of this law?
Well, I think they're misguided. I think that some of those who are saying that we're trying to raise a challenge here when the court is not ready to take it yet, well, I'm not sure if the court ever will be more ready than they are now. If I knew for sure who was going to make the next several Supreme Court appointments, then I might be able to predict that with greater certainty. But we don't know if President Trump is going to be reelected, although I think there's a good chance that he will be. We don't know who's going to control the Senate after 2020. And so I think we have a window of opportunity right now to raise this. And I just simply respond to those criticisms with what the coach Wayne Gretzky used to say, and that's that you miss 100% of the shots you don't take.
Hmm. Even Pat Robertson, I think, said it was a little too extreme.
Well, I can only say I respectfully disagree.
Okay, that's very well put. I saw a little headline, and I didn't drill in further, but Tammy Loren or Lauren or whatever of Fox Nation said she didn't like this law, and it said something like it would punish her, but it would only punish those who are not, it wouldn't even punish those who are having abortions. It would only punish, as you said earlier, the doctors. And you don't know specifically what happens then to nurses or other, you know, accessory personnel.
I would only invite her to read the law. She would find out if she read the law that that is not the case. It does not punish the mother in the abortion situation.
This is very important to bring out. I mean, I think this should be, that point should be shouted from the rooftops, that this does not punish women seeking abortions. I should ask, by the way, sometimes in some of the states, South Dakota comes to mind, they got to a point where they were able, through pro-life legislation and so forth, to basically legislate the one or only two clinics or whatever that were doing abortions. Mississippi, I think, was like this too. They were able to get them to close down. I imagine that there are still at least some clinics in Alabama still that do abortions?
There are at least two at the present time. There may be three or four. But yes.
So Montgomery and Birmingham, I'm guessing.
Could be.
Yeah. All right. So what else do you want to say about the law itself? Because it's certainly being vilified in the mainstream media. You would think this is the worst assault ever.
I'll simply say North Dakota several years ago passed a law that prohibited abortion any time after a heartbeat could be detected. This was struck down by a federal court, and the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed, striking it down, but they very strongly encouraged the United States Supreme Court to revisit its test and reconsider the whole issue of Roe versus Wade. In fact, it's very seldom that I've ever read a decision in which a circuit court like the Eighth Circuit affirms a lower court decision saying we have to because of Supreme Court precedent, but we beg the Supreme Court to reconsider this. And I think the Supreme Court should consider what the Eighth Circuit said in that Stengem case as well when they look to what happens with the Alabama case. By the way, there have been a number of other states that are passing laws that will restrict abortion from the time a heartbeat can be detected. Georgia, for example, Ohio is another, and there are more being considered in Mississippi, Louisiana, and in Missouri. And so we may not be alone in this challenge, although we're the only one so far that has prohibited abortion from birth.
And the interesting...
I'm sorry, from conception.
You know, the interesting thing, too, by the way, is, you know, oh, Alabama's so extreme. Well, what about New York being extreme? Because you're basically you have abortion, you know, up until the time of a birth. So we're basically out of time. Morallaw.org for more information. John Eismo, thank you so much for being with us.
And thank you, Jerry, and keep spreading the good word.
Okay, you too. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless.